The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt, I'm not there. I'm traversing my way up to Studio North, escaping the Beltway. It's a little bit like that Kurt Russell movie, right? Escape from New York, it's Escape from the Beltway. But there's no one better. Well, actually, there are a couple of people better, but let's just say no one is equal to getting into the visibility of the granularity of what's going on inside the Hugh Hewitt Show than Generalissimo himself. So take it away, Dwayne.
Thank you, Hugh. I think Dwayne Patterson filling in today for Hugh, as there's lots of news to get to in the 3 hours we have together. Coming up later in the program, we are going to go through bit by bit the disaster in Hiroshima, Japan, that was Joe Biden's appearance at the G7. Lots of video clips, lots to talk about. He bailed out of that trip early to come home and is expected to meet with Kevin McCarthy today at the White House to maybe begin discussing in earnest something to do with the debt ceiling crisis. More on that in hour three. We will have conversations today with Selena Zito, Washington Examiner and New York Post columnist. She's just fresh back from a trip to Georgia, where she sat down with Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, who is setting himself up to be kind of the kingmaker of the South, a really fascinating piece. We'll talk to her about that a little bit later. We need to get updates on the Turkey election, plus a conservative election looks like is in the works in Greece. And we'll be talking about that with Admiral James Stavridis, plus the latest from the Ukraine-Russia war, what's going on in Bakhmut and those environs. Plus a conversation with Josh Kroshauer of Axios.com, who actually has got some Donald Trump campaign promises for 2024. This is the first time that I've seen the president, the former president, on what he would do as president in the next term, looking forward, not looking backward. Interesting piece in Axios today. So lots ahead, lots of video. Good to have you here. I want to begin in this first segment, though, by remembering three Americans who lost their lives over the weekend. And they all had three completely different walks of life, but they are all three very well known and did have an impact on American society. The first is C. Boyden Gray, who was George Herbert Walker Bush's chief counsel. We've had him on this show, I don't know, three, four, five times over the years. One of the early members of the Federalist Society, a great supporter of conservative judicial causes, trying to get judicial conservatives onto the bench. C. Boyden Gray is a titan in the world of conservative law. 80 years old, had a heart ailment, went to be with the Lord over the weekend, and he will be missed by a lot of people. Hugh will probably make mention of his life and career tomorrow, but we want to say rest in peace to C. Boyden Gray and remember him in our prayers and prayers for his family as well. Second American that passed away over the weekend of note is Jim Brown, the former legendary Cleveland Brown, and that's about the only time you'll ever hear me say legendary and Cleveland Brown in the same sentence. I'm not a big Cleveland Browns guy. I'm not a big Cleveland anything guy. That's Hugh's gig, not mine. But Jim Brown's accomplishments on the field were pretty spectacular in the 60s. And off the field, he was definitely kind of a titan as well. He was very much a civil rights advocate. He got himself in trouble. He had legal problems on and off. He had violence. I mean, he was a flawed individual. Was he on the whole a good person or a bad person? That's not for me to decide. What I will tell you is he did have a remarkable life and a remarkable impact on society. One of the things he did later on in life was he founded a group called AmeriCan, which helps people in gangs and prisons straighten out their lives. And we make reference to that when we come back and do our Prison Fellowship Angel Tree updates throughout this show, because Jim Brown had a heart for people that were in prison, and Angel Tree has a heart for people that are the sons and daughters of people in prison. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But Jim Brown was 87 years old and lived a very full life. So he passed over the weekend. And then to Christians out there, perhaps maybe the most well-known Christian in the last decade or two, mainly due to a lot of his podcasts and a lot of his writings, was Tim Keller, who disclosed back in December of 2021 that he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer and yet kept at it for a long period of time. Well, he lost that battle over the weekend at the age of 72. He was a titan in the world of Christianity and was one of the few people that could pull off a fairly conservative Christian church in Manhattan, of all places. He encapsulated Redeemer, his church's mission, in one biblical passage, Proverbs chapter 2, verse 10. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. He later would tell the New York Times, I wanted to prove that the gospel could change people even in New York. He did change people in New York. He changed people all over the world. Tim Keller was, of course, he wrote The Reason for God, Belief in an Age of Skepticism. He's written a ton of different books. But his podcast was something that actually touched a ton of people, more than I think what you and I are ever going to know. This was one of the podcasts that Hugh latched onto and would listen to very faithfully. And it's with a sad heart that we see Tim Keller leave this world. But we Christians know exactly where Tim Keller is right now, and he couldn't wait. On his deathbed, he told his son, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to see Jesus. And on Friday, he finally succumbed to the cancer. Now, let's talk about what's going on in the debt ceiling world. Kevin McCarthy, who chaired through and steered through a debt ceiling hike raise, the only member of Congress, the only body in Congress, the House of Representatives, to actually pass a debt ceiling hike. Remember, the Senate hasn't done anything, haven't taken up anything, haven't offered anything, has no plan whatsoever. The White House, who has done nothing. The House of Representatives has actually had a piece of legislation that they have passed to raise the debt ceiling. Kevin McCarthy has been begging and pleading the president to sit down and negotiate. The president's attitude is, no, we're not going to negotiate. You just need to give me a clean bill and get to work. Well, that's never been how any of this works. It's not going to be how it works this time. It was an unsustainable and untenable position the president has held. But over the weekend, after returning from the G7 summit, which was a disaster, an unmitigated disaster for the president, it seemed that Joe Biden finally decided, well, I guess maybe we need to talk. Here's Kevin McCarthy, cut number 8.
Does the American public think it's wrong if we simply saying, let's spend what we spent 5 months ago? But every moment I've spent with the president, he doesn't want to go there. He does not want to go back $1. I literally ask him, what is finally the number? Is it $40 trillion in debt? How much before you say, let's stop borrowing from China and not looking at places that we're wasting our money in? Every household does that, and we should do it too.
Notice that Kevin McCarthy isn't standing there just with House Republicans behind him. He had Mike Lee. He's got Ted Cruz on his side. He's got most of the Senate GOP caucus conference behind him as well. The Republicans in Congress are fairly united on what should be done, and it's not that extreme of a position. The House and Senate Republican position on the debt ceiling is fine. We'll raise the debt ceiling, but we're going back to 22 spending levels, and all that money that the White House tried to wallpaper the country with in stimulus relief that wasn't necessary, all that money that hasn't yet been spent, we're not spending it. We don't need to. It's not that extreme of a position. It makes perfect sense. Except, of course, if you're a Democrat, then it's extreme. More on that ahead. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt. We'll be having conversations with Selena Zito coming up, Josh Kroshauer, lots ahead. Stick around. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, America. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt, 51 minutes past the hour. About this time every week is one of the highlights of my week, as I get, at least for a couple of minutes off air, a chance to talk to my buddy Selena Zito of the Washington Examiner and New York Post, columnist extraordinaire. You can read everything Selena writes over at selenazito.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Zito Selena. And this time she gets to join me on air. I think she's on the side of the road somewhere in North Carolina. Hi, Selena. How are you?
Well, good morning. How are you? Yes, it's true. I think it's North Carolina.
Well, you know, you're supposed to be in South Carolina because apparently Tim Scott's going to be doing something down there today.
Well, I'm heading there.
Oh, you're on your way. Okay. I thought you were still on your way back from Georgia. You already came back and then went back down again?
That would be true.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm tempted to spend the entire segment on John Fetterman giving a press conference in the Senate press gallery in shorts and a hoodie and ask Yinzers what in the world they were thinking. But I don't have time for that. I can't spend all that time on John Fetterman, slob. There's more important things to do, which is your piece in the Examiner, which was tremendous, by the way, an interview with Georgia Governor Brian Kemp. What was your takeaway after sitting down with him? I know you've talked to him before, but what's your takeaway of Brian Kemp, where his head's at nowadays?
Well, if you could tell in the interview, he won't tell me exactly where his head is. But one of the most important things for him is rebuilding the party and even just doing some fundamental things that we got away from under Trump, like voter registration and mail-in balloting. That kind of infrastructure stuff that Trump believed was unnecessary for whatever reason. And a lot of party officials are like, okay, it is. And it wasn't. And so he spoke at not just at the RNC retreat and with donors, but also he's been going around to local county parties and talking about the same thing, and really trying to underscore that we can't, meaning Republicans, we can't let go of those important things, because the Democrats are way ahead of us on
those. Just reading between the lines in the questions and answers, I mean, that we all do this. You know, you kind of are trying to get a sense for kind of where he's thinking. And you can kind of just intuit things as you read through his answers. Correct me if I'm wrong. Here is some of the takeaways that I get out of this. Number one, he's not a Sherman-esque no when it comes to possibly running or serving in an administration, but he seems much more committed to try to be kind of the kingmaker of the South.
I think you're absolutely right. people look at Brian Kemp as a guy who went through hell and back to hold his seat, not only after just beginning with his first race against Stacey Abrams, which he won very narrowly, but she for governor, but she to this day refused to concede that race, which is interesting.
He's basically destroyed her career, and she was a real threat.
Yeah, she was an absolute threat. Georgia was on the brink of not just falling to becoming all-Democrat, but to becoming permanently all-Democrat. And she and then in 2020, when Trump really publicly and privately pressured Brian, pressured Kemp not to certify the election, he held strong. You know, he didn't. I mean, he didn't even blink. He's like, "Yeah, no, I'm not doing that." And even when the Major League Baseball, when Joe Biden and everyone said that the voting laws in 2022 were or 2021 were Jim Crow 2.0, and he's like, and they're like, "If you don't change it, if you don't stop it, this will happen. And that will happen, and the sky will fall." And they took the All-Star game away from him. He said, "No, yeah, it's not Jim Crow 2.0. And proved that in 2022 when more voters, in particular black voters, show up to vote right. than had ever in the state. And even in 2022 when he was running in the primary, Trump put up a Purdue against him and then just harangued him throughout that process trying to get Herschel Walker reelected.
Very, very quick out. I gather from Brian Kemp that he doesn't think Trump can win Georgia anytime in 24, but any other Republican can. Is that a fair takeaway? See, that's what I thought, too. Selena, great piece in The Examiner. Everybody needs to go read it, Washington Examiner, or go to selenazito.com and get all things Selena. We will talk to her next week about her trip to South Carolina and the impact that Tim Scott's going to have, plus all things ahead on Hour 2 of The Hugh Hewitt Show. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh. Stick around right after the break.
Folks, as students across the country graduate from colleges and universities, I'd like to highlight a place where our young people receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. When these students graduate, they have studied the great books, the history of Western civilization in America, the meaning and the history of the Constitution. Can you guess which college I'm talking about? That's right, my favorite college, Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty. And it holds true to that mission today, while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. And the best part, you can learn from Hillsdale for free through Imprimis by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. See for yourself. Learn more about Hillsdale at Hugh4Hillsdale.com. That's Hugh4Hillsdale.com. Hugh4Hillsdale.com.
9 minutes till the hour. Welcome back, America. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt today, joined by Josh Kroshauer, senior political correspondent for Axios and a good friend of the show. Josh, welcome. Good to have you back.
Dwayne, great to be back with you.
Two things, and both of them in Axios. One by you, I know for sure, and I don't know if this other one is by you or not, but I have praise to heap on Axios for both of these pieces. One of them, in the wake of Tim Scott making his announcement today, you had a piece, I believe, yesterday that ran at Axios, The Rise of the Black Republican, which was a great piece, not just about Tim Scott, but about Daniel Cameron in Kentucky. Why don't you kind of quickly sum up for people what that story is about?
Yeah, well, this was a sort of a historic week for African-American Republican candidates, whether it's Tim Scott's announcement this morning for president. He's not the first black Republican to run. It's also joining Larry Elder, who is more of a long shot, but also someone who is established in conservative talk radio circles. Daniel Cameron, the attorney general of Kentucky, who was one of the few Republicans to get both the enthusiastic support of both Mitch McConnell and former President Trump won handily in a race where he was outspent.
Rising star at the RNC convention. Yes.
He'll be someone to watch, especially if he can win that governor's race in November. And you also have, we wrote about this in Axios a few months ago, but there are record numbers of Black Republican lawmakers in Congress. We see a lot of Byron Donalds on Meet the Press this weekend, but they're all representing states or districts that have majority white constituencies. So, you know, there is a lot of good news. There's a lot of we like to focus in the media sometimes on the bad news, but there's a lot of progress being made. And if you look at the voting results, the exit polls from the last couple elections, African-American voters slightly, you know, always been a very heavily Democratic voting bloc, but especially among Black men, there's a slight trend towards the Republican Party. And I don't think it's a coincidence we're seeing more and more African-American leaders stepping up and becoming more visible and becoming spokesmen and prominent figures within the Republican Party.
So with the entry of Tim Scott after today in South Carolina, just within the universe of South Carolina, now that Nikki Haley and Tim Scott are both vying for it, how do you see South Carolina if you were to kind of do the odds, you know, several months out, obviously, but they're one. South Carolina is one of the first five states. So, who do you like in South Carolina at this point?
Well, look, Donald Trump is the front runner in almost every one of these early states, including South Carolina. But if you're Tim Scott or Nikki Haley, who are both home state figures, the campaigns have got to be a little bit frustrated that you have two of the most popular figures in South Carolina running against each other. And, you know, if they both get to the point where they're running in the primary and they make it to South Carolina, they could hand the delegates in South Carolina to Donald Trump or to someone else.
With a plurality, right.
With a plurality. That's all it takes. So, you know, look, I think when you talk to the operatives on both sides, you know, we'll see who can raise money, if either Scott or Haley can catch fire. You know, like Haley's been campaigning now for a few months, and she raised pretty good money, but she hasn't really caught fire in the polls quite yet. We'll see what Senator Scott can do. He's now having a real chance to get noticed on the national stage. But look, I think, you know, you have a lot of candidates jumping in the presidential race
this week.
This week, DeSantis is likely getting in later in the week. We're hearing about Chris Christie.
Yep.
We have a North Dakota governor who has a billion-dollar fortune likely to jump in. So,
our buddy David Drucker is reporting that Chris Sununu's got to get in probably this week.
Which is, you know, like, look, I think this all big picture bodes well for Donald Trump. But when you have both Christie and if you have both Chris Christie and Sununu running in New Hampshire, they're gonna split whatever anti-Trump vote there is in New Hampshire. When you have Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, if they're both on the ballot in South Carolina,
it's still who's going to be on the debate stage and forcing Trump to be part of that debate process and who hits Trump the hardest on a debate stage. That to me is what those two entries are going to be about. I don't want to completely lose time here. There is another piece in Axios from the last couple of days. And I just had a part of this grab. I don't know who actually wrote it, but it's the first time in print that I've actually seen a compendium of what Donald Trump's second term would look like from a policy standpoint, from federal workforce to education to law enforcement to gender issues to crime. Was this your piece or was this somebody else at Axios? Because it's a great piece.
Yeah, so that wasn't my piece. It was one of my colleagues, and it was building off of Jonathan Swan's reporting when he was with Axios.
Makes sense.
He really reported on a lot of the moves that the Trump administration were planning to do in terms of reforming and blowing up, really, the civil service, the kind of the rules governing the federal.
But what struck me is this is Axios doing what Donald Trump has yet to do in any public appearance, is talk about what the future would look like. He keeps wanting to relitigate the past. Axios at least has what he would do as a second-term president. Josh, thanks very much. We're out of time. We will talk to Josh next week after about five more Republican candidates have gotten in and what it means to the race. senior political correspondent over at Axios. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.